Thank you for the pause. We're back on the record.
John.
Oh my! I don't think we got a battery in
there.
If we could have John come up here by the table, we've got this mic working. Thank you, John. It saves us.
I'll just have to ignore all of you. I won't be able to speak. Well, of course, I delivered the books to Carson City, and George wasn't there. Mary was there, and Mark, I believe, and one other person I didn't know. And I said, I'm here to deliver books, and Mary said, well, we didn't order any books. And some, I've gotten the exact words, but they, and shortly thereafter, they knew what books I had brought, and they said that they weren't going to accept them. And I said, well, you've got to be kidding. And Mary says, no, I'm not kidding. And then Mark got the idea of calling his attorney, or their attorney. And so in front of me, or in the next office, why he called them, and the attorney told him that there were some of the books that he could accept, but he couldn't accept all of them. So I told him that I was here to make a shipment, and I said, I think I called Rick and asked him, and he said, no, that he couldn't split it up, or at that time I was to go, they were thinking about it, and so I called him back. I stayed in a bar communicating in a payphone, and it was determined that we wouldn't split the shipment up, that I was to go deliver them to the courthouse. So I did. I stayed in a hotel that night, and then early in the morning left for the courthouse. We got there about 3. It was bad weather.
Okay, it was told to us that when you, I didn't even know it was you who brought the books, but whoever brought the books, they didn't know what to do with them because George wasn't there. And so the driver said that he was going to go for lunch and come back after lunch. And the driver never came back after lunch.
Well, that's true. That's right. They sent me to a delicatessen, which I couldn't find, and I ended up in a place called Cheers Bar. And it had been determined that they absolutely would not accept the books.
They didn't know for sure what to do with them with the way it was, we were there.
No,
they didn't know what to do with them because George wasn't there to really say.
No, called the attorney, and the attorney told them that there were some of the books that he could accept. And I told him that the way I packed the truck, they were all separated.
This is Scott Tibbs now, who's giving the advice.
Well, I'm still talking about when I packed the truck. They were all mixed up because I packed it like a cube so I could put tarps over it. You know, the weather was bad. I felt I'd been chosen to do that because I had a four-wheel drive truck, actually. And so they were all mixed up. And I, to separate them, we would have had to take them all off the truck. And I needed, before I could do that, I needed the person that gave me the book to tell me it was okay to do that. And it wasn't okay to do that. So I never went back. That's true. Before I left, I asked him to have my manifest back. And Mark held it back behind his back and told me that, he was working from another list that he made up on his own after talking to the attorney. Because there was some problem in the manifest as far as identifying books. A slight problem. The complete titles weren't down there. And so I could imagine he maybe wanted to keep that to, I don't know what he had in mind, but anyway, he wouldn't give it back to me. I later got the manifest by fax. So I was really there.
Oh, I know. Thank you.
Now, I have to say, please, I have to say, because this also, remember the reason that this was being done. There was a letter, US&P, and I'm not going to divulge who all in cahoots with what, had been following everybody around here, around, I mean practically on your tailgate, peering in the windows, tapping the phones, had the book records. And they had been told that Tatchby Distributing was just simply another part of E.J. and Doris's operation. But they got that box too, and they thought, half of them, that part of America West just left, and this was America West with a different name. So they got their own stories pretty well messed up. There were not four books that could have been left, frankly. You may be wishing to dream that, and George is giving that information, and he's sending Mr. Tipp's letter before the injunction was even signed by the judge, stating, "Dear George, in answer to your request for information," or whatever, George was avoiding any kind of service from the lawyers, from the court. So George never went to court. George was evading, not just avoiding. He would tell them that was not his name. It took them weeks to be able to track him down, to cause him to have to take the service. And finally, the attorney told him to take the service, that we could not even get into a court to release the books. And for him to even consider reclamation of any damages until he was served the papers and this could be handled properly. So at that time, Tipps wrote and said, well, there may be only four books that are really being held. There may be something that can be worked out with the other ones. Well, we already knew that by a simple disclaimer on a couple of them and a few other minor items, it could be handled on the cover pages, that it could be rectified probably. George seems to be the only one who was in touch with the president of the University of Science and Philosophy, as it turns out, because he's also telling everyone that he and Binder are friends, and Binder's on the board of directors, and therefore it's all right. Well, I'm telling you that a committee member of the 300 also sits on that board, and they had set aside $215 million to win this case. So it didn't sound like that there was going to be a lot of let's get along, Bill. When at the end of the letter from the attorneys, it said, no matter what is done with the books, the contempt of court charges stand and will be... what a pursuit. And it was at this point, because Rick had been followed, these ones had been followed at high speed chase to Bakersfield. And it's hard to tell whether the SWAT team's after you. It's hard to tell anymore who's after you. So the contempt of court charges still stand. That is not settled. And Mr. Tipps, you know, this good old friendship bit is getting a bit old. Well, now he's upset because he listened to George and he wrote a stipulation asking for release of these books. And the court does have discretion, if all parties are agreed, to release the property. Well, the only problem was that two of the parties were not even notified. One is Mr. Martin of Tatchapi Distributing, who owns the books, and their own attorney, who had so many calls from Mr. Green on the day that this broke that he had to call Mr. Tipps and threaten legal procedures if Mr. Green didn't stay off the telephone. Maybe, Rick, tell us for the room what happened from your side. John has made a statement, and maybe it would help to realize why you decided to do it, etc.
Lean forward.
In fact, you may as well bring it right up current, because you not having an attorney and not having the benefit of one can still call their attorney.
When I spoke to John and it was clear there was some difficulty with delivering the book, I had many conflicting thoughts running through my mind. It was unfortunate that George was not there. However, Scott Tipps was the one making the calls as to what could be accepted or not accepted. I had heard this about the four books before, and I knew that it was not accurate. I knew that dividing the books would be an error. It just didn't feel right to do that. The first thought that I had when the books were not accepted was to just have John dump them. But that was just a thought that just ran through my mind. And, well, just dump them and come back to Dashby and your job is done. But that was not a reasonable approach to the entire matter, because there was this court case involved. So after some thought on the matter, there were calls back and forth while John was waiting in this bar. The only reasonable approach, well, let me back up just a tad. Timothy Buchanan had told me that what his clients wanted to see happen was that the books be destroyed, preferably by fire or dumping in a public dump. And I told him that was not acceptable. The only other reasonable course of action at that point was to put them in the hands of the court and let the court decide. In my own mind, I had returned the books to George. When America West did not accept delivery of the books based on the advice of their attorney, everything changed from that point on. At that point, Tehachapi Distributing put them into the hands of the court for the court to make a legal determination as to what should happen to them and to who they should be returned to. There were many calls back and forth, obviously. John left, spent the night, and went down to the court. There were many calls, heated calls, between Tipps and Timothy Buchanan over the status of these books and what the court would accept or not accept. The judge's clerk was involved in this discussion back and forth. And in the end, the court accepted all of the books and signed for them. It was signed by the clerk to the actual judge involved. I have received many, many calls from Canada and all over the United States from people saying that George has told them that the court no longer wants these books and that they are releasing them into his care. I finally wrote a letter to Scott Tipps a number of days ago asking for a cease and desist request be formally and legally made to George Green on behalf of Cash Distributing, that he stop these false statements to the public. I have also sent a statement to Timothy Buchanan and to Scott Tipps stating that I, as Tehachapi, president of Tehachapi Distributing, do not give my permission for the books to be released either to America West Publishers, America West Distributors, or the University of Philosophy. and that has put it at a stalemate. And that's basically where we stand.
I was going to just ask.
In the letter that the commander was referring to from the University of Science and Philosophy, had this letter had been faxed to me that stated that Timothy Buchanan was writing to Scott Tipp saying that Tehachapi Distributing and Rick Martin are merely an offshoot of Doris and E.J. Ecker, and Doris and E.J. Ecker are in contempt. And these charges will be pursued. And that then involved for the first time Tehachapi Distributing and Rick Martin.
What did Grant tell you that day?
Well,
about the letter.
I didn't want to bring him up. But Grant did phone me and warn me that I was being set up and that I was to watch my backside. And he, in fact, was the one who faxed the letter from Buchanan, which was a private letter from one attorney to another attorney. And based on that, I just said, BS. I've had enough. I'm returning the books to George Green. They're his problem. But when he did not accept them, then it was clear to, in my mind, that it was a much larger issue. And would continue to be a much larger issue, and it's ongoing, and it will be a very, I feel, a very important case.
But well, George wasn't there to refuse the books.
But he was not. No, and to the best of my knowledge, he may have been in the background. I don't know.
May I offer an observation as well? You know, originally there was this whole question. Originally the books were given to Tehachapi Distributing because there was the foreknowledge that they would be under court order not to sell them. Later, George sent Tehachapi Distributing a bill for the book.
3 months later.
George sent Tehachapi Distributing a bill for the book.
For $86,000.
Right. It is totally appropriate, since Tehachapi Distributing understood that that was a gift, when being faced with that bill, another totally appropriate motivation for returning those books is that discrepancy in the fact that it was Tehachapi Distributing's understanding that it was a gift. If it is now to be paid for, I'm returning your property. So if there's no acceptable reason that I can see for them not accepting their property for which they were trying to build another business, which, you know, was...
I believe the question that I had when I wanted John to give his story was that George had not said he would not accept the books. And that's what I just, because that's what he stated, and I wanted, I'm after the truth all the way, and I'm not stopping for anything, but.
Well, I was George's legal counsel.
I'd like to tell you that Mary suggested to me that I take the books and burn them, because I told her I was worried about leaving them on the truck because of the rain and snow. And I asked him, well, is it possible to leave them here like overnight if I have to take them back? And she said, no, you know, I don't care what you do with the books, you can take them and put them in a ditch or a dump and burn them. And then she also suggested maybe taking them to the courthouse. But they were, I want to put emphasis on the fact that they were totally refused, 100%. Maybe George wasn't there.
And I have never acknowledged the validity of the bills that I received from America West. In my mind, they are null and void.
Well, you have to understand, he continued to accept money for for these volumes that were banned, that were absolutely, he was not to touch them. He was still collecting credit cards, and you can bet the adversary was buying them. And they know it. It went right through. There were over $12,000 just in credit card orders against those books that he owed to Hatchpee Distributing.
Another point that I'd like to make is that that the books were from America West. They were not personally from George Green. They were from America West, and representatives of America West refused the books. So sometimes it gets to be a personal issue, but legally, the business that they were meant to go to did refuse them. So.
Well, I think Leon was saying that America West was expecting John to come back after lunch. They made kind of a little statement like that. John, what was your last word on whether you were, when you left, or did you tell them you were coming back after lunch, or did you leave with the idea that, that they actually completely
refused,
the business
to do,
was done?
Yeah, we were talking.
Well, I was talking with the attorney involved too during this whole negotiation, and his position remained unchanged.
The idea of going to lunch, more than anything, was a way to get out of their office to talk to Rick. You know, they had already been refused. He had already talked to their attorney.
You didn't tell Mary you were coming back after lunch.
Well, yeah. I didn't eat lunch, by the way.
But he had a good dinner later.
Yeah, I was sitting in a bar called Cheers, and they were giving me, they felt, you know how they do when you order coffee and you don't drink, they give it to you, make you feel guilty, like you should have something to drink. They were doing that all Cokes for, I guess, a couple of hours. And the idea was to resolve it through the attorney, was my impression. And once it was resolved, why then there was a chance I could deliver, which is what I went up there for. And so I waited.
Well, all legal. Had he accepted those books, he would have been absolutely in contempt of court, because the injunction said they were to deliver all copies of all nine of those volumes in possession to the court months before. So we can argue all we want about whether they refused them or did not refuse them. Had he accepted them, he would have been massively in contempt of court, because those books in his possession should have been turned over to the court. And the court was very glad to get their hands on them.
Well, Commander, just out of curiosity, does anybody know which books they did would have received, the ones that were strictly banned, or what? Or what? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, there are nine books, and yes, they're listed. They're listed on the injunction as the ones that, in varying stages of question.
If George had accepted the $86,000 for the books, wouldn't that have been in the weekend?
Yes.
Well, sure, it would.
Well, then sending the bill was in it.
But you see, what he did was work out a deal. In fact, the second letter demanding the money and saying, I never had a deal to give them to you, and the invoice for 80 gives his own self away. He already had worked a deal with the University of Science and Philosophy and told them that he was out this much money. So he had worked a deal with them to release those books.
Manner?
What, please?
I would just like to bring up the fact that even if you set the whole issue of the books aside, what George Green is doing now and participating in by calling people and trying to get them to remove funds from the Institute. This is criminal in itself. This is conversion. And being a board member himself, he could be up for criminal charges just for doing what he's doing. And this is not godly intent. You know, put all the other issues aside, what he's doing right now is obviously criminal.
Okay, he says he's not on the board.
How?
He's never
well,
sent a
Leon,
resignation letter.
We're so sorry.
Okay, I'm just stating that.
I know, I understand. But this is something that everybody needs to look at, what he's doing. Why would he be doing this? Except for his perceived revenge or his whatever trip he's on. There is no godly intent for him to do what he's doing.
There's another reason. The chief could have got the Institute to pull, got in a legal bind. We never may have found out about the other gold that he's taken. He walks away with $1 million. Clear, green, clear, and everybody here is signed out for life. The way I look at it, the only person, you have to look who's making money on the whole deal. And the whole time, the only person here who made any money is George Green. The Liberator was losing money when he was running it. When
still
he got taken over here, started breaking even, paying people. We had all volunteers before. Rick was making money on the books for a while until we had all the problems. But George was losing money. How does it work out?
Well, the commander always stated that he was always losing money. I assumed that he was losing money.
Well, we all did, because that's what George said. The commander all along lets us try to find the truth ourselves.
Well, and he's lost money. If you want to consider the books, if you don't go sell something. But you see, the important thing is he didn't lose as much as it would appear. Because of the agreement, he was going to continue to help here. They were going to leave office furniture. Everybody sat in those meetings. He was going to leave furniture. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. And they stripped the place for all practical purposes. And it meant that ones had to go to the used bookstores, and once again, funds that really would not have been used that way had to be used. It has not been pleasant. And then he said that he would send funds to help. And then there was quite a problem when it came to getting the money that had been sent in as subscription payments transferred. That was finally done. I don't know if there was a full accounting or not. It's immaterial at this point. Then when this wasn't going to work, it was his agreement. Well, since Dorma had never taken anything for the books, no royalties, nothing, the agreement was that after they broke even, 50% of the profits would go to the Institute, not to Eckers, into the Institute to be utilized for expenses and salaries, etc. He was putting nothing into the Institute. He was pulling out from the Institute. That's where the $150,000 base note comes from. And yet he told Nora personally that that's nothing but a paper trail. I don't owe them anything. So then he offered, well, all right, I will send monthly to the Liberator to help with expenses because I know it's tight over there. 10% of the profits, or was it gross? Of the gross of all the journals that I sell. So the first month, and this was sort of a confused and split up thing, he sent around $1,000 or something to the Liberator. That was it. That would have been in July, August at the very latest, and there's not been a cent cents. Now that indicates that either there are zero books sold or there is something wrong with accounting. You have to come up with that there's something wrong with accounting simply because we know of some books sold. And in discussions with him, he would say, well, I can maybe sell 500 right off of the new press, but, you know, it's really hard with the old ones. And the ones that Druthea wrote are selling pretty good. Well, I guess we don't count that one as being one of ours, so there you have it. These are pieces of dirty laundry that would never, ever have gotten even discussed had it not come to this. Because at some point you're trying to get your job done, and this is a tremendous waste of time and effort. And it's very, very debilitating for everyone. But it's very strengthening in its opposite way. The funding resources otherwise against the projects are excellent. We just had word last night on the fax machine, money is transferring this very day. That means that there should be some funding pouring in here now to begin some of the preliminary work on some of these projects. And if Audrey would like to, Dorma shared the letter with her so she can verify that at least the information is very good. It just happens that Audrey has an investment in that particular funding resource against a retirement home. That doesn't mean that usable funds will show up tomorrow afternoon. It means that these ones handling these massive trading transactions will have to first of all confirm, settle, and then the commissions begin to come back, and then the trading program begins to roll it over, and then it is divided, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're talking about massive international funding and involvement with all of your international banking institutions, and then the effort of getting some of those massive amounts of money transferred without nine-tenths of it going to taxes. And if you think that they don't dicker and make deals, forget it. They dicker and make very big deals. On the other hand, much of the money can be brought into the states exactly like you utilize corporations as loans and notes. And in some instances, it does take trust to very fully be able to utilize these systems. And yet when there is great disgruntlement or disagreement or misunderstanding, it's easier not to struggle with it. And I would repeat, court is not available today. He's gone to attend corporate business, etc. But there's very valid office facilities, shipping facilities, everything you need being set up in Las Vegas by court. Everything is absolutely impeccably being taken care of business-wise. We cannot even consider working with the funding sources that are coming, and this is only one of three. The others include such critical, life-threatening potential that I cannot even talk about the resource. But it's very valid. And that, too, is being set up not only to get some of the money flowing from offshore where it can be secure and the people into security And that is going, their security in every instance is going to depend upon your integrity. You may never know. You may never know how or why or when even a given project is yours. It won't be set up that way. We're not doing business as it's ever been done before, because you're not going to lose all of it. And the best way to not lose it all is to not own it all. But you need better understanding of the use of your corporations and what that security and privacy means. It is not just some game that we have thought up to make it convenient so nobody has to pay any taxes. If you owe taxes, pay them. We're not in competition with your government. We're not subversive. We're not trying to overthrow anything. We're trying to build something and retain as much as we can for the work. And yet there are many, many shelters if you use it properly. It's of no value and only dangerous if you don't use it properly. So if it seems that some of the ones are being nitpicking, nasty and cruel, they are following corporate procedure to the letter for your protection and your privacy. And any kind of request regarding your personal assets, as they may have been put in and on a personal level, that was never intended that it be that way. Some, however, did not form corporations. On the other hand, some monies were directed to different segments of projects and have been used. So those have to be replaced through the Institute, because obviously once they have been funded and utilized, those resources cannot pay them back. And if it's the Constitutional Law Center, it's got to wait now. There are two sources of money that will be coming into the Constitutional Law Center. One will be a fund set up by the military for some constitutional issues. There will be other funding. There is a minister who has been accused of molesting children. His church was attacked, and two of the young men said that he didn't do it. They were just trying to extort money from the church. The third young man decided he would go ahead and try to extort money from the church. And so this one was convicted. And I believe they're waiting for a retrial. I'm not sure what the status is with this. His name is Reverend Davis. It was a famous situation. And the Constitutional Law Center was contacted because they described the sexual acts, and it very definitely involved penal penetration, and this man had been impotent for 15 years prior to the incident. So all information could not have gone to court, could it? So some very interesting things are going on. The Constitutional Law Center right now, along with trying to clear up this other situation here with America West, is efforting to deal with the situation in Los Angeles. They are doing unconstitutional actions. They are secreting jurors from all identification, and this means that they are going to make private, secret hearing. That is unconstitutional. Los Angeles is being set up for a war. So things are happening. Your efforts, your work, your dollars, your volunteering is paying off. Why do you think you're getting attacked? If I ever misled you into thinking this was a rose petal strewn garden path, then I cannot imagine how I ever did it. Because I'm also accused, on the other hand, of being a fearmonger, and don't we ever have anything good to talk about? We're finally having something wonderful to talk about. You're making headway. You are making headway. The Constitutional Law Center now has a reputation that when Mr. Dixon walked into the Pentagon offices of General Powell, who had been called to the White House, General Powell's staff got up. Oh, we know about you. We were waiting for you to arrive. You are making progress, and regardless of what happens with this other thing, we aren't going to slow up a second. And yes, you do need spiritual support. So I'm going to go on hold. I have to go on writing what needs to be written to get us through this. And Sananda is picking up the spiritual guidance from the Rainbow Masters. And we will be riding on those things. So it's not a time of sitting back and licking wounds. Dharma and Oberly still are in absolute daily waiting for eviction. There is every effort being made to work a deal with the RTC, who now has full, now I mean, this is another thing, for Mr. Green to be telling people from Canada to Florida that there is no litigation on the Ecker dwelling. That's all fabrication, and they didn't pay their bills, and they didn't do this, that, or the other. There have been over 100 laws and motions. Oh, probably near 200 now. There have been dozens of court appearances, 5 in 1 week recently. And glory hallelujah, the RTC won. But maybe because there is a bid or two on the house through the RTC, because you see, somebody else can buy it very, very cheaply. They cannot touch it. They cannot buy their own property. Someone else can come in and buy out the RTC's interest, and then they are willing maybe to deal with Eckers for temporary capability of staying in the house until they can conveniently, or a little more conveniently, move the offer that is being made from Arizona is the most gracious of all, because it would allow them, they don't want the property until spring, late spring, early summer. They would rather have someone living in it. And the RTC even has said they would rather not have the property vacant while they were working on this transaction, but they also want to play games. They want to force the issue. Yeah, for a couple of $1,000s a month, you can just sort of be caretaker there. Well, that's unacceptable. And that isn't the point, though. They will let them stay there another 30 days, 60 days, while nobody's in the house anyway, pay rent, and in exchange for that cute little favor, these ones, they want to drop all charges against the non-sale, all ones before, which is a federal criminal action. So it's fun. It's fun. And Gorma would like to go sit in a corner. You know, she's got a daughter ready to have a baby, and Daylene's got bronchial pneumonia. Moved into a different house so they can handle Giandriana, which this is what George is doing down this weekend, to set up a way, hopefully, to close you down from any kind of conduct of sale with Giandriana. So there are always plenty of pressures. I never said it would be different. You volunteered. I accept it. Your commitment is with God. I'm here as a commander of a project. And I'm going to get it done. And I welcome aboard anyone who wishes to travel with me. But I'm not going to be blackmailed. This other thing is very serious.
Commander, question?
Please.
Are there facilities in Hawaii similar to those in Camp David?
I think I shouldn't answer that. There are several facilities all over. Camp David is only one. They do almost as much at Bethesda. So. There are very, very large replica facilities in Australia. That's one of your major. It's bigger by far than Camp David. But you also have the largest underground security facilities for the elite there also.
Commander.
Please.
Regarding the monies that George has short-stopped, I expect you meant some of those funds were supposed to have gone direct to the Institute.
All of them. All of them.